Greetings to all God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. Today we are in lesson 159, and last time, in the last lesson, 158, we came to the point where Isaac now is dealing with his second son Esau, who came again with a meal, just like Jacob, who deceived him earlier. And of course, Isaac is extremely surprised that supposedly his son already came and gave him the meal and he gave him the blessing, and now he shows up again. Of course, now he sounds like the real Esau. And so we read in verse 30, "And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob," so Jacob is just about at the end here of receiving his blessing, and Esau is on the doorsteps. And so we read, "And Jacob was yet scarce, that is scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also made a savory food." So by the time Esau appeared, that was a reasonable time. And so had Jacob also went hunting, he would have come only at this point. But since they cheated, he and his mother, they took a couple of lambs there that he had among the flocks, so he didn't have to spend as much time getting it. Anyway, all that worked out, ultimately speaking, in spite of their cheating, in spite of their interference with this process of the passing of the blessing, yet God worked it out according to his will. And that's how God often works out, you know, whatever he wants to, in spite of us. Even our own salvation, as I said many times, "I'm not doing it for your sake, I'm doing it for my sake. I will redeem Jacob," as I said many times, "for my great name." And so the blessing will be given to Jacob one way or the other. And so we read in verse 31, "And he also, Esau, made savory food." Now he is the one that makes it here. His mother is not involved. "And he brought it and to his father," and obviously it takes a while to prepare all that, so by the time he comes to his father, that was the reasonable time that Isaac would have expected Jacob, of course he didn't know it was Jacob, thinking it was Esau, would have taken earlier. "And so he brought it unto his father, and he said unto his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that your soul may bless me." And so he gets to the point. And Jacob didn't speak like that to his father. And yet Esau was a kind of an abrupt person. He just gets to the point. He just wants what he wants, and that's it. And he doesn't have any time for manners and, you know, greeting his father and asking him how he feels and things like that. No, he goes directly. You rise and eat and give him the blessing. So that tells you an awful lot also about this man, Esau, that later on God will tell his own people, as he's arguing with them in essence, debating with them about their own conduct and his own grace toward them in spite of them and his love toward them. In Malachi, you read it, in the first chapter, the first couple of verses. He says, "Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated." There were so many things about Esau that God did not like, and he did not like him from the womb, knowing what he's going to be. And so in verse 32 we read, "And Isaac his father said unto him, who are you?" Now he knows who he is, you know, he recognizes his voice, but it's a matter of a shock. He is very shocked that right after Jacob appeared and this whole process of the eating and the blessing is over, now appears somebody that really sounds like Esau. And so, being shocked and disturbed, this is what he's asking him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, "Who then is he that has taken venison and brought it to me?" Of course, by now he knows that it was Jacob and he was deceived by him. And yet notice what he's saying here. "Who is then is he that has taken venison and brought it to me, and I have eaten of all before you came and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. And so now at this point, Isaac realizes what really happened, and he also realizes that God wanted it that way. And so that sort of enlightening, you know, descends on him. And as we mentioned earlier, we don't know why Isaac all this time was not aware of the fact and did not act accordingly that God long ago, before they were born, already promised the birthright to Jacob and not to Esau. In other words, to the younger son. And why is it that at this time he's telling his firstborn that he's going to give him the birthright or the blessing? And so at this point, it all dawns on him, you know, sort of the light comes on. And so he says that, and yea, he shall be blessed. He realizes that it is from God. There is nothing he can do about it. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceeding great and bitter cry, and said unto his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. Suddenly, you know, the blessing is very important to him. Well, before that, he didn't care much about it, and he sold it to his brother. So he himself, he should have been honest about it and told his father, maybe his father knew about it, that he sold it to his brother. And so he shouldn't be seeking to gain it again after he gave him, you know, his word and he swore. As Jacob said, I want you to swear. I don't want your word. I want you to swear. There must be an oath here. And so he said that Moab at the time had no respect for it. He had contempt for it. And yet, suddenly now he realizes how important it was, and so he changes his mind and is willing to go through it. But then again, it shows you his dishonesty. His brother was dishonest, and he himself was very dishonest. If you gave your word, if you swore, and if you are a man of your own your word, you know, you should have said to your father, look, you know, with all due respect, I already sold it to my brother, and I don't deserve it. You know, it belongs to him. Well, it did not even dawn on him to even say that or even think that or even act like that. So that again, you know, it tells you an awful lot about the character of this Esau and why God felt about him the way he did. And so now he's pleading for a blessing, realizing that there is an important reality here that is bypassing him unless he gets it. And verse 35, and he said, the father Isaac is speaking here, your brother came with guile and has taken away your blessing. Now, he hasn't taken away his blessing in the sense that he already sold it to him, but the fact that he knew that Jacob, that is Esau, was going to be blessed and receive the blessing through this ceremony, through this event of bringing the venison, he cheated him in that sense. But ultimately speaking, Isaac and Esau should have realized that Jacob did it because it belonged to him, and they were the ones who were wrong, were trying to, you know, totally disregard the fact that his brother sold it to him. And so in essence, you might say that the three here, including Rebekah, that'll be the four, are totally wrong in all that they've done here. Every single one of them had their own guilt to bear. And oftentimes when it happens like that in the family, everybody suffers. And so that's also a lesson about how not to be in a family. And the consequences of this event that we are going to read about here is still haunting us to this very moment. And as we shall go through that, we're going to take some time now and discuss this matter of the birthright and its consequences throughout history in the nation of Israel, later on is it divided into the nation of Judah, and also later on into the nations of Israel as they went abroad, that continued to haunt them. A lot of people have no knowledge of that. And to this very day, all are, in essence, involved in this matter. They're paying the penalty to one degree or the other on either side. And it's not over yet. And so as we go through it, we shall see something that, unfortunately, historians and Bible students and scholars and whatever have not been too keenly aware of the reality of what is really happening. They've been under false concepts of the identity of Esau, and therefore did not really understand the consequences and how they impacted this descendants of the twins to this very day. So we're going to go through that, and there would be a lot of interesting information there. And so at this point, father Isaac says, your brother came with guile, which he did, and has taken away your blessing, which he did, but on the other hand, if he sold it to him, he hasn't taken anything, but he came and took his own. You see, so they should have at least accredited him for that. That he was forced to do it because of what they did, which was wrong. You know, on the part of the father, and that's probably one reason why Jacob went along with his mother's request, which was cheating, because he too must have been pretty unhappy about it, that his father should have known better. And so his father was disregarding the oath that was between him and his brother. And so you can see the emotions and the feelings that affected all these members of the family. And yet God made up his mind long ago. So regardless of their behavior and their conduct, God's will was going to be done one way or the other. And oftentimes when we have to realize that we should have peace and be fully aware of the fact that God knows all that is happening. And if we find ourselves in a condition where people are taking away whatever, you know, belongs to us, we should remember God knows all these things, and he would ultimately give it to the person who, you know, should receive it. Of course, at this point, every single one of them is not obedient to God. Neither Jacob nor Esau, nor Rebekah nor Isaac. And therefore, the will of God was done in spite of them. Which is very unfortunate. You know, Father Abraham would have never done that. So something, as I said, happened here between Isaac and Rebekah, and who knows what's happening here in the relationship even of Isaac and his God in terms of this matter. The Bible does not choose to record that or reveal that. All we know is the consequences and their actions. And those who can read between the lines, you know, can find out what's happening here. And so, in verse 36, Esau replied, and he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? That means a supplanter. For he supplanted me these two times, which he did not. Yes, he took advantage of him the first time and was hungry. You know, but Esau could have said, no way, I'm not going to sell you my birthright. And that would be the end of the story. So he would have gone somewhere else and got some food. So it was his fault, but he's not willing to acknowledge. And to this very day, his descendants are not willing to acknowledge their error or their wrong. You see, anyway, as we go through the story of Esau and Jacob, we're going to find out more. And so he said, he took away my birthright, which he did not. You see, he took advantage of the situation that I was hungry, yes, but he did not take it away from me because he could not have taken it away from me unless I gave it to him. So again, he too shows his character. He's totally dishonest. Yes, Jacob is a supplanter and likes to exploit. That's true. That was a problem. But on the other hand, Esau is totally dishonest about his lack of appreciation for his birthright, an attitude that he shows and still does to this very day. And then he cries about it, and he blames Jacob for it. And so he said, he took my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Because through the blessing, the birthright is being passed. So you can see, in essence, a division here between the blessing and the birthright. And the blessing is the total passing of the inheritance, which includes the birthright, and also, of course, the blessing includes also what you give to the other children in the family. And so in essence, he thinks that he's going to get it all to himself. You see his selfishness in this matter. And he said, now to his father, have you not reserved a blessing for me? In other words, did you give him everything? Got nothing left for me? Verse 37, and Isaac answered and said unto Esau, behold, I have made him your Lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what then shall I do for you, my son? In other words, I've given him basically most everything that I could give. You know, the blessings that were given to me, I gave it all to him. What else is left for you? And Esau said unto his father, Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. So now he's realizing the greatness and the size of the blessing and the all the promises and all the covenants and all the greatness of the future that he's been cheated off because of his own conduct and behavior, but to this very moment he's not willing to admit it, either to himself or to his father. And so he acts as if he had never done anything wrong. And still, he has no relationship with God. He doesn't repent. He doesn't show a humble attitude. He's just asking like the little brat, you know, talking like the little brat, you know, that when he was offered whatever, you know, he's offered by his parents, says, I don't want it, you know, I don't care about it and all that. And now when it comes to the real thing, when things are being passed away, you know, on, now he suddenly rediscovers, you know, what he really misses, and he wants it all to himself. And you can see, yes, that Jacob had his problems. He was a supplanter, but at least he had a great appreciation for that which was his to begin with. And God promised it to him and not to his brother, but, you know, the way things worked out, and he too was aware of the fact that his father was not doing his part. And so you can imagine, there is an awful lot of things that are happening behind the scenes there. Because to begin with, that event earlier, when he bought, you know, the birthright from Esau, he should have never done that. There was no need to do it, because God gave it also already to him, and that he realized also at the same time that I, for some reason, and we don't know why, because God does not choose to reveal that, Isaac, his father, didn't feel that way. And so whatever he knew from his mother, somehow his father, Isaac, did not go along with it. And so he should have, you know, he should have been spared that reality before, when he had to buy it from his own brother, something that belongs to him. And it's interesting the way it happened also in history later on. Isaac, Jacob, the descendants of Jacob, sometimes had to buy, in essence, that which belonged to them to begin with. Just like Abraham earlier had to buy that piece of land to bury his wife. And yet that land was promised to him to begin with. He should not have paid for it. And so it's interesting to see how things happen in history. But in either case, Esau now rediscovers the awesomeness and the greatness and the immense blessings that he should have had it come his way. But to begin with, he too should have known also that God had already decreed that it does not belong to him. But from that moment, you see, all the members of the family should have known that. You can be sure that Rebecca was not going to hide that reality that God told her, that the elder one is going to serve the younger, and the younger one is going to be the one in charge. And he's the one that is going to receive the blessings. You see? And the birthright is going to be the firstborn in that sense. Everybody was aware of it, but it seems to be that every single one of them was not going along with the program, so to speak, you know, with the will of God. And so everybody was paying the penalty, and because of that, to this very day, and in the past, since that time, many, many centuries, 3,800 years, but especially when Israel came back to their land about 3,500 years ago, there was an awful lot of blood that was being shed because of this very thing. So you can see, you know, the mistakes of the fathers are overtaking the children for many, many generations down the road, where God himself is going to have to intervene and put an end to it. Because to this very day, blood is being shed for this very reason. And much more is going to be shed in the future. And as we shall go through this story now, of the twins, Jacob and Esau, and their descendants and their history in the future, into the future, to this very day, and into the future, we're going to find out many of these things, and we ourselves are going to be involved in it to one degree or the other. And so Esau now is crying all about it, you know. He should have thought about it earlier, appreciated that earlier. And that's the reason why later on we read in the writings of the Apostle Paul, as he's speaking to the Hebrews, to the children of Israel, reminding them, speaking in specific about those who are now also illuminated in the Spirit, not only Hebrews in the flesh, but also Hebrews in the Spirit, that they should never follow the example of their uncle Esau, brother Esau. You see? Or Edom, as his name was called. Adom means red, because of the red lentil soup that he ate. He said, don't follow his example, because he was a profane person. His spirit, he had a profane spirit. No appreciation for the will of God, for the law of God, for the ways of God. No appreciation for his grandfather and his father. You see? When it came time to take a wife, they made sure that it is someone, that person will be someone from the family. He had no appreciation for that, and he brought an awful lot of grief to his mother and to his father, because he took wives of the natives, which meant idolatry. And so he was a profane person, and Paul is warning us on a spiritual basis. Don't be like this person. God hates the spirit. And that's one of the reasons, you know, why God says, Esau, I hated, Jacob, I loved. It's not that he hated the person himself, but his attitudes. And for that matter, when we show those attitudes also, he hates it in us too. God hates sin. Anybody who shows it, and Jacob certainly had plenty of it and still does to this very day. So on one hand, Jacob is not better than Esau. In many places, you know, Jacob was even worse than Esau. But nevertheless, Esau was used as an example, just like Egypt became an example, and Pharaoh became an example on a spiritual basis, and Sodom and Gomorrah became an example. And so Esau now is lifting his voice and he's crying bitterly. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, of the fat places of the earth shall be your dwelling. In other words, now Isaac, you know, he feels bad about it, and he says, so well, you've got to give him something. And he's also inspired at this point by God to do it, because after all, God is the one that is going to give the blessing. It's not man. So he himself, on a personal basis, he cannot give him the blessing anymore. All he can do is pass on what belongs to him in terms of his property and household and all those things. But much of the birthright has nothing to do with what he owned. It has to do with what God is going to give him. You know, the land of Canaan, everything there, and that certainly didn't belong to Isaac at that moment. And so he offers a blessing here. And later on, even Jesus Christ would refer to that, you know, when his son pleads with the Father to give him a blessing, you know, when he asks for bread, does he give him a serpent? You see? And then also you read in the book of Hebrews in chapter 11, speaking about the fathers and the hall of fame of all the men of faith, it says that by faith, Isaac, you see, by faith, Isaac, he gave the blessing to both Jacob and Esau. You can read in the book of Hebrews in chapter 11. So it is by faith that he gave both of them the blessing. Not that he gave the blessing to one and a curse to another. As people, you know, that did not understand the scriptures properly, and they saw the ultimate fate of Esau later on, still not understanding and comprehending the full picture, not having background, not having context, not having knowledge of history of the time, and in the past many, many centuries, in essence, changed the wording of Isaac, and instead of what Isaac said, behold, off the fat places of the earth shall be your dwelling, they change the wording by saying, away from the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling. Isaac didn't say that. But Jesus Christ made it very plain. When his son asks a father for bread, he doesn't give him a serpent. So when he asked him for a blessing, he didn't give him a curse. You see, when he asked him for the fatness of the earth, he didn't give him a place that is away from it. But unfortunately, you know, those who are not in tune with God do the thing they are, and unfortunately we've seen some of those among us, who did not have a proper understanding, though they thought they did, and so they pass on deception to others without even realizing it, because of their misunderstanding. And so based on misunderstanding and lack of knowledge and comprehension of what is really happening, they just used human reasoning, contrary to the will of God, who warned us, do not lean to your own understanding. Don't try to understand my words based on your intelligence and your understanding. And when any one of us does, either great or small, well, we make mistakes. We may be sincere about it, but we make mistakes, we misunderstand, and to begin with, we're not obeying the will of God, who commanded us not to use, not to lean to our own understanding, especially when it comes to studying His Word and comprehending it and obeying it and teaching it to others. And so He said to him very plainly, behold, all the fat places of the earth shall be your dwelling. Because you see, God is the one who is going to give it to him. After all, he's still his son. He's not the firstborn now in the sense of the birthright, but he is the firstborn nevertheless. Just like later on we'll read about Reuben, who was the firstborn, and the birthright was taken away from him and given to Joseph and to his descendants, to his two sons in specific, Ephraim and Manasseh. But what does that mean, you know? Was Jacob thrown out of the house, you know? He's now living on welfare? Handouts? Of course not. God gave him also a sizable measure of blessing. As he entered into the land, he had that large, extremely fertile territory on the east bank of the Jordan. And then as he went into captivity and finally ended up in modern France and other places, you can see he received an awful lot of blessings too. And so God always blesses all of his sons and daughters. He gives his sunshine and rain and all kind of blessings to the righteous and to other unrighteous. So there was no reason for anybody to pervert the scriptures, and that's in essence, unfortunately and tragically, what they've done. By saying that Isaac, in essence, they're calling Isaac a liar, you know, and holding the word of God in contempt, when they say that God did not bless Esau, but he cursed him through Isaac. And instead of off the fat of the places of the earth shall be your dwelling, it's away from the fat places of the earth shall be his dwelling. Obviously, again, because of misunderstanding and ignorance and lack of knowledge. And that's very unfortunate that too many of the teachers who should know better are resorting sometimes to their own human intelligence, and they come up with their own comprehension. And many believe it, and they think, well, he certainly should know. And so he said, no, behold, all the fat places of the earth shall be your dwelling, and of the dew of heaven from above. And when you learn, study the history of Esau, where he went, the places that he went, and where he ended up, not only at that time, but as time went by, and to this very day, especially in the past century or so, would have a greater comprehension of this statement. And then our eyes will be opened, and we would realize that our understanding, our ways are not the ways of God, our thoughts are not the thoughts of God, our comprehension is not the comprehension of God, because we have leaned to our own understanding. And so, in verse 40 we read, how, in essence, he is going to receive these places. With Jacob, he told him, may God bless you, you know, and give you the fatness of the earth, but with Esau, he said, you're going to have to get it the hard way. God is going to be with you, yes, but you're going to have to get it the hard way. He says, by your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it's by the sword that, generally speaking, that wherever Esau went, he gained his land by the sword, oftentimes. And does not mean that Jacob didn't do it either. You see, when Jacob came to the land of Canaan, God told him, you go make war against all those Canaanites, and Joshua was the chief of staff for the army of Israel. And they went all over the place, and they, by the hand of the sword, they had to conquer the land so they can inhabit it. But the difference is that God went in the forefront of their armies. He was the ultimate chief of staff of the host of Israel. With Esau, God did not go in the forefront of the armies of Esau. He let Esau do the hard work on his own and bleed for it also. But he also gave him a little of nudge and a help, so he would end up with the blessings that he wanted him to have. After all, he too is a son of Isaac and a grandson of Abraham, his beloved friend. And so let's remember that. And so he said, you're going to be a man of the sword. In other words, a bloody man. You see, Jacob was a man of tents, was a man of flocks, was a man of sheep, was a man of peace. He had his problems, but he was not a warman. A man of war. And by the way, the man of war in Assyrian means harman. That's in the ancient language, in the Assyrian, harman. Since the people cannot pronounce it in other languages, as time went by, those very people who even use that name, they lost the ability to pronounce those letters, and so Harman becomes German, which later on became, in modern language, German. See? That's what German means, a man of war. And that's how they got their name. From Harman, and to this very day, you go to the Middle East, and even you go to Israel, where many of the Jews there are from the Middle East, that word is still pretty common. When they talk about a man who is a troublemaker or gets into mischief and all that, they still to this very day call him Harman. In modern language, it'll be German. Of course, they don't think about it. But that's in essence what happened to the word, as it circulated, from one language to another, and finally ended up as a German. And so I said, you're going to be a German. In other words, a man of war. And by your sword, you shall live. And you shall serve your brother. See, whether you like it or not, I cannot do anything about it. So, that may sound as a curse. To serve your brother, you're not going to be the top. He's going to be the top. But ultimately speaking, if you really serve him with humbleness and meekness and humility, see, and you're following the same path and the same faith, that curse, in essence, that you're going to have to be under your brother is going to turn into a blessing. You see? As God told Abraham, those who bless you shall be blessed. Those who curse you shall be cursed. And as ultimately God says, the nation, you see, and the people, speaking about Jerusalem, speaking about Israel, speaking about Jacob, in the future, as well as it was in the past, the people who say, he said that will serve you will be blessed. But any nation that will not serve you shall perish. And so even this, though it may sound as less than a blessing, when you think really about it, if you serve God, is it a curse or is it a blessing? And if you serve Jacob, and Jacob is righteous, you see, and Jacob shares the blessings that he has with you and the knowledge of the truth, wouldn't it be a blessing, ultimately? So again, he was not really cursing him. He was blessing him. But you see, people don't think from God's point of view. And they think, whoa, that's a horrible thing for me to have to serve my younger brother. Well, if you think carnally and humanly, which Esau did, and many of us do to this very day if we're not careful about it, we don't know the difference between a blessing and a curse. Some people think it's a blessing to have a lot of money. Until you get a lot of money and you realize all the troubles that you have. And even for beauty, some people want to be very beautiful. And they don't realize what happens when you are very beautiful. It proves to be a curse for many. Look what man in his corruption has done to beautiful women. They put them in the wrong places. They use them wrongly. And the beauty of a woman becomes a curse to her. And that's the way it happens when we have contempt for the law of God. But when we serve God, our weakness becomes strength. Our ugliness becomes beauty. Our poverty becomes riches. You see, human beings don't think that way. That's because we lean to our own understanding. So when we have problems, if we think from God's point of view, they are blessings. You see? Because they will drive us to God. They will help us build a relationship with Him, an intimate one. We would realize what is really important in life. So there is a lesson in it. In either case, as God meant for it to be, it was a blessing, not a curse. Even though, humanly speaking, for the elder to serve the younger was a shame and humiliation. But if he was humble, he would say, no problem. I will. Let the will of God be done. After all, I'm the one that got myself into this position. Shouldn't blame anybody. But ultimately speaking, look, you know, if I serve Jacob and he's the servant of God and God gives him the blessings, you know, and the truth comes through him, the Messiah and the grace and the birthright and all that, you know. So what difference does it make? You see, but we don't think like that. And certainly Esau was not about to think this way. He thought everything was a curse. And he took it like that. And he did not even appreciate the blessing that Isaac was passing to him. He took it as a curse. And so his reaction was totally different. And so we read, as Isaac continues, though it sounds like bad news all the way, but it's not. Not when it is in the hand of God. He says, it shall live by your sword, and it shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass when you shall break loose, you see, or in the King James, when you shall break the yoke or the dominion. In other words, he's going to have dominion over you, but now and then, you know, you're going to break that dominion. And when you do, obviously, you're going to free yourself. He says that you shall shake his yoke from off your neck. So he's in essence describing the future history of these two brothers who are going to be at odds with each other. And as it is acknowledged and understood by the rabbis who studied this matter and understood, because they have known history, the history of their own nations and the relationship between Edom and Jacob, and what happened, especially in their own days, the Second Temple era, and they basically said, among many other things, that the history of Israel is such that when Jacob is on top, Esau is at the bottom. And when Jacob, because of his sin and iniquities, is at the bottom, Edom is on top. And this struggle, they say, is going to continue until the end of days when the Messiah will come and put an end to it. You see? And then Jacob would not be anymore ever under the yoke of Edom. And to begin with, they're going to leave his brothers. And there would be peace. And so there was an eternal struggle that continued there. And unfortunately, most Bible scholars are not aware of it because they're not as informed as they think they are. And they don't comprehend matters as they read them. And they lean to their own understanding. And there are even many of the great and the mighty, you know, among the people of God, you know, the churches of God, who have a total misunderstanding of this reality and the history and the background and what is happening to this very day, and even the identity of Esau. Many have the identity of Jacob, but they don't have the identity of Esau, so they really do not understand world prophecies as they think they should, or as they think they do, because of this, and therefore they do not really understand even the conflict of the Middle East. You see, a major blunder that many have done is by thinking that the whole problem in the Middle East is a matter of Ishmael-Isaac issue. And that's a major blunder, because you don't find any biblical backing to this contention. Now, you find at the end of time, where Ishmael is involved also in the conflict. But when you study the entirety of the Bible from the beginning until the end, you find out that the whole conflict and the whole bloody conflict that spread beyond and spilled beyond the borders of Israel into many other lands, of course people do not know the identity of Esau in modern days, that is all the places where Esau went, not only the part of him that remained in the Middle East, They don't comprehend at all the seriousness of this matter, and the awesomeness, and the ominous importance, and calamities, unfortunately, that are coming upon Jacob because of this very thing here that we read about, of what happened between Jacob and Esau. So we're going to have a background, and an overview of that. I spent some time, about 11, 12 years ago, I wrote a book about it. I called it Middle East Blueprint for the Final Solution, basically describing the 4,000-year history of this conflict from past to present, including the identity of all the tribes of Israel and all the peoples of Esau, not necessarily tribes, but the nations of Esau and the places where they spread. Because you see, for this prophecy to occur, for this blessing to come to pass, when Isaac says that you're going to be under the servitude of your brother, Jacob, you see, wherever Jacob was, Edom has to be there too, to be under the servitude of Jacob. Otherwise, this doesn't happen. You see, this becomes meaningless. So you see, the two of them, the history of these two, are always intertwined. Well, one is, the other is there too. And they're constantly at odds with each other, at least most of the time. Sometimes they love each other, and sort of have a hate-love relationship, or at least a mutual relationship, sometimes friendly, oftentimes friendly, but most of the time there is animosity there. And even though when both of them have lost their identities, not speaking only about the Jews, speaking about the entirety of Jacob and Esau, though they lost their identity, many of them, the same problems still continue among them, the same constant fighting and bickering over the birthright. And wherever Jacob went to receive his birthright and his blessings, there was brother Esau. And so, the statement also that when you are on top, in essence, you shall shake his yoke from off your neck, still happening to this very day. But it's not only in the Middle East. It's wherever Jacob was. So maybe, you know, for some who are thinking very deeply, you might get some clues to what I'm talking about. And as we go through this overview of Esau and Jacob, the twin brothers, that are unfortunately are going to see still an awful lot of blood being shed between them, and God himself, the one that became the son of Israel, who was the father of Israel, that is, the Messiah, the Redeemer, he's coming, and he personally is going to put an end to this war. And we're going to read the prophecies about it. In other words, we're going to study the Word of God from the point of view of the understanding of God, not of men. See? We're going to lean to his own understanding, and he's going to guide us. It's not me. I'm just going to read those things. But he's going to guide us through the statements that he preserved by Moses, by the prophets, by the apostles, you see, in person also, and to this very day, about the real problem. Because today, in the past, especially since the establishment of the State of Israel, in essence, a major part of the world, if not every single person, not most people, but major part of the world has been affected by what is happening in the Middle East. And at all, who study that matter, who think that they understand, they all think, oh, it's all that problem of Hagar, you know, and Sarah, and Ishmael, and all that. And that's an awful lot of ignorance, you see, because there's a kernel of truth in it yet, you see, though Ishmael was involved in it, especially in the past century, but throughout the history of these people, from the beginning of their time, it was not an Ishmael-Isaac issue. It was always a Jacob-Esau conflict. And so we're going to understand it from this point of view. And so we read in verse 41, this is the attitude of Esau, who now receives a blessing from Isaac, doesn't consider it to be a blessing because of his attitude, his profanity, his lack of appreciation and respect for anything that God gives him. You know, because he's a man of blood. He's got his own arrogance and his own haughtiness and his own self-concept of honor and disrespect for God. Too many bad qualities, unfortunately, along with many good qualities also. So you cannot emphasize only one side. Esau had many good qualities. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time discussing, you know, the history of Esau in terms of history, because that's going to take an awful long time. As I said, I wrote a whole book about it, over 500 pages, which includes an awful lot about the conflict and also many other aspects of it. But we'll have an overview of that, and you can take it from there and do more study into that. But then we read here in verse 41 the attitude, the reaction of Esau. We read, and Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing, still unwilling to admit his error. You see? There's no trace of humility in the man, of honesty, of acknowledgement. Look, I brought it on myself. You see, I never had respect for it. I never cared much about my father's religion, my grandfather's religion, about the covenant, about the promises. Couldn't care less about it. Sold it to my brother. You see, and I have no right, you know, when my father tells me, you know, I'm going to give it to you, I have no right to say, yes, you know, I want it. Should have been honest about it. Says, well, sorry, my dad, you know, I got to be honest about it. I sold it to my brother. You see, well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point and continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.